The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
And a very good afternoon to you. Brenda Donoghue here, and I would love your company and thoughts, of course, on 51551, or you can email ray at rte.ie. It's Friday, so what are you up to today? Hooray! Sorry, hooray! Whatever you're up to, we should have something for you on the programme today because we have a full house. Alton is here in studio. Hello, guys.
Hello.
How are you? I can't wait to hear you. We also have journalist Rosita Boland is going to be in studio to talk about her book Elsewhere, which is about her life and travels. Chef Gary O'Hanlon tells us about his big move to France. Dermot Gavin on houseplants. And any questions you have for Dermot, get them into us, 51551 or email ray at rte.ie. And we'll put them to him, definitely. We certainly will. Now, there are two lovely letters today in the Irish Times about smells that remind you of a specific place in Ireland. So Luke from Castleknock, he fondly remembers the smell of the brewery by the old harbour just off St James's Street. And Anne is on and she recalls the smell of the countryside in Galway, just like the farmyard. The horseshoes being put on the horses, which apparently is a very distinctive smell. Now, I didn't really know that, but it got me thinking, what smells remind you of a time in your life or a place or a person, like maybe your granddad's aftershave, the chlorine from a pool, that makes a lot of people think of summer. And people love the smell of new books and new school books. That can put you right back there in the classroom. It really can, can't it? Yeah. But one of the things I was trying to remember, very strong memory that I have, is my grandfather. He used to be the shoemaker for the Irish Army. So he used to make all the leather shoes and they'd all come to his house, and he even had a little shoemaker shop in Newbridge. But every time you go and visit them, you get the smell of leather from his workshop as it used to waft through the house. And that always just takes me right back into visiting their home and seeing them and seeing him sitting there in the chair and he'd doing his work. But anyway, what's the one smell that has the strongest memory-evoking effect on you? What specifically does it remind you of? Ray at rte.ie, 51551. And Mairead from Alton, you must have Donegal smells, if you don't mind. I know that sounds
well,
a bit weird.
That's
but
true.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark. You're talking about my perfume, of course. When I remember coming back from college, and before that, when I was living at home, I never smelt the turf. But I remember coming around the edge of Errigal one evening and I could smell the turf, and I realised I had left home, you know.
It's funny because I know that a lot of estate agents, they buy these little portable turf pieces, and they put them in a house so people will get this familiar
welcoming
smell. Welcoming.
Yeah, so welcoming.
Yeah. Anyways, another question for you. Have you ever watched a kettle boil or waited for a kettle to boil? Well, there is a piece in the Daily Mail today and it has a breakdown of all the things we have to wait for in life. A survey of 2,000 people find that we spend 11% of our entire lives waiting around. And I'll read out some of the examples of life's great time wasters. We wait for kettles to boil for nearly 4 months of our lives, if you think about it. I'm a great one. I boil the kettle, then I go off, I do a few jobs, and then I have to go and reboil it again. Are you the same?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
And the same for traffic lights, 4 months of your life. We spend 3.5 months waiting for buses and trains, 4.5 months on hold on the phone, which is probably the worst when you're listening to that awful on hold music for ages. And we wait for the bathroom for 3 months. Now, I think that's longer if you're a woman. Definitely longer, because I think the way toilets are designed, they're kind of, they're not equally the same amount of time. Anyway, this is one of the longest you'll wait, for nearly 7 months for your food to be ready in your whole life. So let me know what you wait for. The doctor's surgery, the bus stop, 51551, ray at rte.ie. I love the smell of turf too. Reminds me of my childhood. The lovely smell of flowers on a gorse bush reminds me of walking up the Mourne Mountains on a school field trip, said Nuala. Now, we were having great crack in the office this morning, and we were, and I won't name names. Well, I might. It just depends. But we were confessing to a few things we did as children that we actually never got caught for. Someone in the office. Well, I'm looking at the person now. But anyway, no, I won't say the name. I won't. Someone in the office stole coins from their granny's troker box.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Like, seriously?
Oh, come on. Come on,
you'd know by the look of him.
You would know by the look of him, wouldn't you? He's gone red up there. And another person at the second layer of Quality Street, and then the box of chocolates was given to the local priest as a present, and the parents never knew. But I remember, this is true, oh God. Actually, this is the first time probably my parents are hearing it. I remember as a child I was meant to be going to elocution classes. So I ditched, and obviously they didn't work, but I ditched them. And there was an old disused house in a field, and we all went playing there. I was about, I think, I can't remember, 12 or 13. But we start climbing, and I was hanging out of a rafter, and it fell and banged down, crashing the floor, hurt my knee, blood everywhere. I went home. I couldn't tell them I wasn't at elocution class. So I said I fell on a crack on the road outside a house, and my poor father drove up and down past that road looking for the crack for years. So now you know this is what happened. So what are your confessions? Tell me your stories of what you got away with back in the day. Also, who got the blame and did you ever own up to it? ray@rte.ie. And speaking of things that are a little bit annoying, what's the worst thing that can happen in a cinema or, guys, at a gig? It's a rainy day in Dublin, and maybe it's a nice evening. You might head to the cinema, or maybe not. But a radiotimes.com poll during the week has found that the biggest irritation for moviegoers was having the back of their seat kicked. Same on a plane as well, definitely. But here's a breakdown of all the responses from the poll. Having your seat kicked, 29.5%. Talking, 24.1%. Phone use, 15.8%. Eating noisy food, 7.5%. People who sit in the wrong seat and refuse to move, 6.9%. And kissing and cuddling, 3.2%. So do you agree with these? What wrecks your head at a cinema or at a gig when you're trying to focus on the gig or watch the film? And someone on the team was actually saying, was it Niamh, that were at the Lion King recently, and people were just sitting there scrolling down their Instagram feeds. And I can tell you the light is really, really annoying. But anyway, have you complained? Like, would you lean over, tap somebody on the shoulder and say, excuse me, would you mind not kissing or cuddling? Or could you mind, you know, come off your phone, stop talking, I'm trying to watch the movie. Let me know, 51551. And actually, Mairead, well, you're gigging all the time.
Yes, we
what
are.
What annoys you in an audience, or what do you notice?
Well, nothing much now. I don't see much and I don't hear much, so it doesn't really matter. No, no. Actually, the actual phone, you know, the phone going off. I've done it myself. But yeah, just like that.
Stand up, tell me about that. Tell me about that. We have Martin Torres on piano accordion there. Get into the mic, Martin.
So there was a point years ago where everybody seemed to have a Nokia phone that was, and they were incapable of turning off. So this became so much of a thing at one point, I ended up just making a virtue of it and writing a tune about the Nokia theme. So
go on, play it.
And so on. It gets worse.
Thanks, Martin. That's brilliant. Brilliant. Well, Alton are here. How are you guys? How are you, Mairead?
Oh, we're great. We've just been up at the Fla doing sound checks. We're playing there tonight.
Are you playing?
Going back there now after this.
All right. So introduce everybody
so
who's here.
So this is Mark Kelly from Dublin on guitar. And
the Dubs, Mark,
The Dubs.
There has to be one or two of us in it all the time.
Here is Kieran Kern from Canolly in County Fermanagh, living in Gidor now on Bazooki, and he's the wise man who doesn't talk. And anytime he does talk, he a lot of sense. And this is the youngest, he brings the average age down. So this is Dr. Martin Turish on piano accordion, and we're delighted to have him. And myself.
And yourself, and you're going to stay with us for a little while.
As long as you want.
Well, I'd love to have you all the time.
This is lovely. We're having a great time. Thank you.
Well, listen, it's Friday. Will you kick us off with a song?
Yes, this is a song in Irish. Of course, I'm from the Gaeltacht, and this is the happiest song in Irish I know, which is called Donal Agus Morag. It's about a wedding.
All right. Well, Alton live on the Ray D'Arcy Show. Take it away.
vanish. Donna Lagas Mora Carinho vanish Anna. The cat can on the Donal, she donalar in your vanish. Donalagus mora car in your vanish and mull. Donal, she donal, she donalar in your vanish. Donalagus mora car in your vanish and mull. Donal, she donal, she donalar in your vanish. Donalagus mora.
Amazing. If that hasn't put a skip in your step on a Friday, I just don't know what will. Alton there, they're here ahead of their concert. Obviously, you're in the flat tonight, but yes, you're also in Ballykeef Amphitheatre in Kilnamana in County Kilkenny next Saturday, the 24th of August. Mark Helly, Martin Torres, Kieran Kern, Mairead Ní Bhaile, you're going to stay with us for a little while?
Yes.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed that. And we'll have a chat and we'll have a great catch up in a little while. Alton, woo! Thank you so much. Well, we have lots in on how smells can evoke memories. And Mary has sent in a text here. She said, the smell of cooked rhubarb reminds me of my mother's rhubarb pie in the kitchen. We'd love to get the smell of it when we walked into the kitchen from school. I can still feel that flutter of excitement to be having a treat when I'd get the smell. My mum passed away at Christmas. Yes, thanks Mary for that. Brenda, I always remember the smell of chocolate passing Cadbury's factory in Coolock, said Pat in Sutton. And my late dad used to smoke his pipe. He smoked clan tobacco. Really loved the smell, said Anne. Old Spice aftershave reminds me of my dad, said Mandy in Kildare. Always remember in the 1980s getting off a train in Clark Station in Dundalk and the smell of the hops from the brewery just hitting you, said Fiona. I remember that smell too, Fiona, very, very well. And the smell of cut grass reminds me of making hay with my daddy. I miss him. Big, strong, lovable man who's forgotten the wonderful memories he gave us. He's lost them to dementia, but we have them all for him. Oh, that's a very sad text there. And the smell of tomatoes in 1960s in Rush in County Dublin can still smell them over 50 years later. I love the smell of tinned spaghetti being heated on a gas cooker. Really? Holidays in a caravan? Every time, said Helen. Brenda, I love the smell of new paint and when you cut the grass, said Deirdre. Well, do keep all those texts coming in. We'll have more from Alton a little later on in the show. But coming up after the break, Joanna O'Riordan will be here to chat to us, previewing the All-Ireland Hurling Final. And if you're from any of the two counties, Tipper, Kilkenny, what are your thoughts? What's the mood like in the camp? And how are you showing your support for the team? Have you painted your house black and amber? Is your tractor bedecked in royal blue and gold? Are your nails painted in the county colours? Are you in bunting or banner heaven? 51551. We'll talk to Joanne after the break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And it's Brenda here until 4:30 today. It's going to be another big weekend in Croke Park. Tipperary face Kilkenny in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final. To preview the game, I'm now joined by Irish Times sports writer Joanne O'Riordan. Joanne is in our Cork studios. Well, Joanne, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm great. How has the summer been so far?
It's been nice now. Nice and relaxing now. Just kind of coming towards the GAA season now and kicking off with ladies football again next weekend. So nice and busy, but nice and quiet at the same time.
Next weekend will be a big one.
It'll be massive now. Massive. Yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah, yes, yeah, should be good.
Definitely.
In Croke Park, two great semi-finals, yeah.
And I'll be there.
Yes, I will see you there, will I?
Yeah.
Cool.
That's it. See you now. Bye.
Yeah, we're done.
Listen, what are you doing? How are you spending the day? What are you up to this summer?
I suppose really just kind of focusing in on the Irish Times and the work that I do with them for Women in Sport and recording season 2 of the Joanna O'Riordan podcast as well with Red FM. So it's very interesting and very good times, I think, ahead. And that'll all be coming out now towards September, October. So should be good crack. And I hope people tune in anyways.
Of course they will. Now, first things first, right? You're a Cork woman.
I am.
Yeah. Do you have any secret allegiance we should know about? Because like if you think geographically, Cork is closer to Tip.
Yeah, I don't really personally have any affections towards either team. I suppose that's the Cork rivalry coming out. But for maybe last year, I spent a little bit of time with the Kerry ladies football team. So maybe my loyalties lie a bit more towards Tipperary. I'd be ran out, I suppose, if I came back. But no, I'm 50-50 now. I'm nice and equal. I'm as equal as you can get from a Cork
totally
side.
You're neutral. And when it comes down to like the last minute and, I don't know, Tipper 1 point ahead, what are you going to be shouting for? Kilkenny to score a point to keep the lead? That's the moment when you actually know if you're a neutral who you're up for.
I know, yeah. I think everyone's a bit tough. I suppose the Tipperary boys, a few of them would have been playing in UCC when I was in college, so I would have known one or two of them. I remember Bubbles was actually in CIT as well and he used to give UCC a hard time. So, Era, you'd never know what could happen. From a Cork perspective, I just want a good game and, looking forward to next year.
Well, actually, my husband's from Kilkenny.
Okay.
He has my poor children brainwashed. So much so that in the heart of Kildare, out of the bedroom window, there's a big Kilkenny flag. Well, it does make a change from the Dublin flags around Kildare, but there's a big Kilkenny flag. But I'm staying neutral.
Yeah, I think you're better off. I mean, you'll avoid all the controversy now. You'll have everyone listening to you as well over the weekend, so you'll be fine. You'll be grand.
Now, listen to me. You before we get into the nuts and bolts of the final, you write, as you said, with the Irish Times.
Yep.
And there's been a huge debate in the letters page about whether it's a hurl or a hurley. What's your opinion?
Well, in my full honest opinion, being from Mill Street, it's hurley. That's as far as I go with it. To hurl for me is the verb. And I remember about maybe 6-7 years ago, I was doing a talk with Apple and a few of the Cork hurlers were coming in to kind of show them what hurling was. And actually they thought hurl was to puke and get sick. So that's how you know it's a verb. And hurley is the noun. But Brian Cody said in an interview was a hurl. So I've been told by everyone that if Brian Cody says it, that's the truth.
That is the truth.
I like to rebel in Cork.
What are your thoughts ahead of Sunday?
Yeah, it should be a cracking game. Like, I mean, it's a repeat, I suppose, of 2016 All-Ireland final, where Tipperary won, I suppose, by 9 points. And yeah, it should be good crack. You know, I mean, Brian Cody is looking for his 12th title. Liam Sheedy is looking for his third on his watch. So yeah, it should be a good cracker. And I think both the rivalry on the pitch and on the sideline will be something definitely to go for, definitely.
Now, I think the road to the final has been, you know, very interesting. And what the semi-final has told us about these two teams, who will never, you know, you can't put them down, they'll rise back up again. But Tipp's win against Wexford, Kilkenny's win against Limerick, what can that tell us about the two teams that are going to meet each other on Sunday?
I suppose from a Tipperary point of view, it's probably just to not give them, you know, not give any of the Tipp forwards any bit of space. I suppose we saw Jamie Callaghan kind of banging goals left, right and centre. You know, Noel McGrath picking up assists and points left, right and centre as well. And even from a defensive point of view, like, I thought they were actually decent enough with Brendan and Pádraig Maher. So I think that's something that's kind of interesting. From a Kilkenny perspective, I think everyone was concerned whether, like, the Croke Park thing would frighten them, because there's a lot of young fellas there. You know, Adrian Mullen is one of them, and he's shown to be a real talent, I suppose, this summer. And yeah, I suppose overall it's just shown that both teams actually will never give up until the final whistle, which is something they were both pushed, both by Wexford and by Limerick in their respective semis. So yeah, no, it should be an exciting game, and I suppose both teams will go at it. And you know, we've been hearing all about hurling traditions and things like that with all the commentary going on, but I think this will be one of those traditional finals for sure.
Now, someone from Tipperary has just texted and said, Tip need to watch out, Kilkenny are hungrier for it.
I think they are. Like, I mean, they lost, say, the last one against Tipperary, and that was by 9 points, and Brian Cody won't like that at all. Like, you know, I mean, that one was one of the biggest losses of his tenure, I think, in an All-Ireland final. So he won't like that, and I know he doesn't really get probably along with Liam Sheedy as much as, you know, much as possible. You know, it's a good rivalry that they have, and I think the younger boys, he'll instill a fire, I suppose, in them, and a belief and a hunger in them that they wouldn't have seen before, you know. And I think Brian Cody's pretty good at that. You know, I suppose he's one of those managers that gives the players the freedom to think for themselves, to play for themselves, and see how it goes. And he's ruthless as well, and I think that's what the players know as well.
And the styles of both those managers, how would you describe them? You've talked about Brian's, let's talk about Liam Sheedy's.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, we've kind of come to know Liam Sheedy, you know, from the Sunday game and doing his analysis and looking at structures and patterns, you know, and different things like that. But I think the core part of the team is the same. You know, Brendan Maher, you know, likes to get tight, you know, to certain players and bomb forward as well. You know, Noel McGrath likes to be free roaming and kind of do his thing on the side. And you know, Pádraig Maher as well, he's a rock as well for them. And I think, yeah, it's important. I suppose puckouts, you know, will be massive as well, and Liam Sheedy will have focused in on that. You know, it's up to him whether he wants to give the half forwards for Kilkenny the space, but kind of clamp down on them as they're marching down the field. So I suppose he'll have his homework done, you know, like that. And I think it's something that'll be really interesting to watch. I think Liam Sheedy will be a bit more tactical in his approach, and I think he'd have everything kind of keyed out. But Brian Cody will be the same as well. It's just it'll be more kind of passion and fury within his Kilkenny players.
Now, there are some very exciting players to watch between TJ Reid and Seamus Callanan. It's going to be really, really exciting. But now, Joanne, it is time to call it.
Pressure, guys. No pressure. I personally think if Tipperary get their matchups right, and I think they will, if, you know, they allow, I suppose, stop Colin Finlay from driving into space and clamp down on TJ Reid and Walter Welsh, I can see Tipperary winning it by 2 or 3 points. That's my personal opinion. I hope no one attacks me. Kilkenny, I'm still available for whatever you need.
Well, can I just say Michael Deignan on RT.ie is tipping Tipperary as well, which is playing perfectly into Kilkenny's hands.
Thank God someone else worthwhile is doing it, because I thought my prediction, they've blown up my face the last 2 weeks, so thank God Michael Deignan's coming down with me as well.
Now listen, you are going to be previewing the ladies' football semis next week in the Irish Times. Cork are playing. You've got skin in the game.
I do.
25th of August, first match Galway Mayo, second match Cracker Cork and Dublin.
Yep.
What are your thoughts?
I think there'll be two absolutely unreal games, you know. I think the Galway and Mayo, the Connacht final that they played, went to a replay, and I think Mayo are coming through with what we like to call a Mayo 2.0, because it's a whole different team that we would have known from the last few years, and they're led perfectly by Sarah Rowe and Grace Kelly, like, and all those players. So I think they'll be definitely a good match for Galway, who've got the Leonard sisters as well, who are absolutely flying. And Galway used to kind of stutter for a little bit during championships, so it's nice to see them off on a flyer. And then Dublin and Cork, I think it'll be pure football, all hell for leather, and kind of hope for the best. And it should be an absolutely cracking game. I know everyone complains about the football championship, but if you flick over to TG Carr, I suppose, and the ladies, and, you know, watch some of the ladies' stuff, you'll see some good pure football, I think.
Okay, and a question. Are you up? You're going to be there in Crow Park. Well, you know that the Marty Squad will be live in the Croke Park Hotel.
Yep.
Will you come over and give me a hand?
I would be so honoured to join you on the Marty Squad. I was only thinking about it during the summer. My dad said to me, why don't you apply for the Marty Squad? So now my dad's going to be well chuffed that he gets to go on the Marty Squad.
Well, Joanne, I can't wait to see you. I look forward to it. We'll see how your predictions go. Yep. It's going to be an amazing weekend. Looking forward to it already. Brenda, Joanna O'Riordan is a great ambassador for Ireland and for the Irish Times, said Deirdre. A lot of love coming in for you, Joanne. I wonder will there be after your predictions
probably
today?
Not. No, I'm going to turn on my Twitter now and get lots of hate now, I'd say.
Not at all. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. I'll see you Sunday week.
Cheers, Brenda. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks a million. Joanna O'Riordan there. She's tip and tip. We take a break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And welcome back to the show. We'll have Altan coming up with another song a little bit later on. But right now, writer and Irish senior features editor with the Irish Times, Rosita Boland, has joined me in studio and has been very passionate all her life about travel, taking months off at a time to explore the world. Her book, Elsewhere, documents her adventures backpacking across continents and is full of poignant observations on life. Rosita, thank you very much for coming in and having a chat with me.
Thanks very much for having me in, Brenda.
Not at all. I love it. It says, Elsewhere, one woman, one rucksack, one lifetime.
Of travel.
Of travel. Where did that love of travel begin? Did your family take you to exotic locations?
No, it was always, I suppose, curiosity about the wider world that made me want to go and see what was out there. And Ireland is a lovely place, but it's very small. And I always knew that there was much more to the world than the place where I lived. And I started travelling when I was 19, interrailing, and really loved it. And then did my first big trip after college, as so many people do, when I went to Australia for a year. And yeah, I just loved it and decided that I would keep on trying to do as much travel as possible and work for a time and save up and head off again.
Yeah.
So I've managed to keep doing that, even though I have a full-time job now, which I didn't have back in my 20s. But I'm still compelled by Elsewhere.
So can you explain that compulsion? Because a lot of people tend to maybe find somewhere they like going and they go back to the same place because there's that sense of familiarity with it. They know where the shop is, the pool is, the bar, whatever it is. But what is that compulsion to far-flung places, to completely different cultures?
Well, I think it really is, for me anyway, as simple as just curiosity. And the more that you travel, the bigger the world is, not the smaller. And I really kind of thrive on all sorts of new experiences. So I always want to, I'm not really very much interested in going back to places. I want to try and have more new experiences and see more new things and experience more new cultures. And I guess because of the way I traveled, I was able to take several months off at a time, which meant that it could be extended travel and I had a lot of time to spend in the places that I went to. I never really had any kind of itinerary in my head. I would just get a one-way ticket to somewhere and keep on going. And that's a life choice that I was able to make because I had short-term jobs for quite some time and was able to do that in between jobs. And I don't regret a single minute of it.
Absolutely not. So you've travelled for 30 years and some of your adventures and thoughts and are in the book here. You couldn't put everything in. What did you decide to put in and what did you decide to leave out?
Yeah, so it's the Elsewhere, it's a collection of 9 essays and each one is set in a different country at a different time in my life over 30 years. So it ranges from Australia to Antarctica to Peru to Pakistan and Iceland and Bali and other places. And how did I decide? Well, it's not a traditional linear narrative, I suppose. And I couldn't have written it without having had the diaries that I had written when I was travelling, because I have always kept a diary when I was travelling. And it wasn't just being able to remember where I went and what I saw, but I was also able to, by rereading the diaries, remember how I felt about things at the time. And that's the hardest place to access in the past, how you felt 10 or 20 years ago or longer than that about various things. And I was really able to mine those diaries for that. And how did I decide what I was going to put in? Because it's over a span of 30 years, there had to be a kind of a geographical and a chronological spread. And as a lot of my journeys were for extended periods of time, I could really only pick max two countries from each of those times. So there were lots of places that I could have written about that I didn't, like Colombia and Iran and Bolivia and Ecuador. So maybe I'll write things about them another time. Because the essays, they're not just about the places that I went to. They have bits of memoir and other sorts of stories all woven into them. And they're about lots of things, not just about the countries.
The actual country. I know. Because sometimes if you meet somebody and they've come back from their holidays and you say, how did it go? And they sit down, they proceed to tell you, well, we had dinner in such a place, such a night. And then I did this, and then I went and I did this. And you kind of find yourself starting to fade. You know, and you're trying to be polite. You just really want to know that they had a good time and they really had good adventures. So in a way, what makes this book so interesting is that your description of places, I can see them. They're so vivid. So you must have had, I suppose, great memories too, that those diaries really did help you. Can I go to your first one? Because you started quite young. You were in London and you were going to buy yourself a bookshelf. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, so I lived in London like many Irish people have at different times of my life. And I was working in a publishing company. I had a lot of books and I had no bookshelves. And at that time, before Google and the internet, where people went when they wanted a pet or a job or a flatmate or a set of bookshelves, they consulted Loot, which was it came out twice a week. It was really a listings publication, and I was looking for bookshelves with delivery because I had no access to a car. And I found a set of bookshelves that came with free delivery for £25 at Primrose Hill, and I was living in Camden at the time. So I rang up and I organised to go around at 11 o'clock on the Saturday and get the bookshelves. So I turn up on the Saturday morning and I go to the address and I ring the bell and I go up in the lift, and the door opens straight away in the apartment. And I was a little bit surprised because the door was opened so quickly. The person must have been standing
door waiting
right behind. And
they were looking out the window. They saw you coming.
So it was a man and a woman who introduced me to as his wife, and they were, I'm really bad at guessing people's ages, but they looked like they were probably in their 70s. I was in my early 20s, so, you know, couldn't even imagine being 30 at the time. So these people seemed
ancient,
unspeakably old to me. And anyway, they, apart from the fact that they were seemed to be standing right behind the door, they were really overdressed for Saturday morning. The woman was wearing this long blue taffeta skirt and the man had a cravat and a waistcoat, and they were just very, very dressed up for early on a Saturday morning. And so I went in and they gave me a tour of their entire apartment, including their bedroom.
Lovely.
Which I found so strange. And I had no idea why they were showing me their bedroom. And I never bought anything through the small ads before, and I was wondering, is there like a code, or is this what people do when they go around to buy something? Is this what happens? And anyway, I saw the bookshelves, they were fine, and then they offered me a glass of sherry.
Lovely.
So this is not long after 11 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And so I sat down, I took the sherry, I didn't really know what else to do with it. And they started to grill me about my life in London. You know, I was Irish. Did I miss my family? What was I doing? Where did I live? What was my job? And so anyway, I'm just, and they're chirping away, sitting back in their armchairs, holding out their glasses like they're at a cocktail party. And at one point, the woman asked me how I spelt my name. So I spelt it out for her. And she said, we never had a Rosita before. And at that point, my imagination just really started to run away with me and thinking, what, where is this going? The door had been locked and bolted behind me when I had come in and nobody knew where I was. I just told my flatmate I was going out to get shelves, but I hadn't said where I was going. We never did things like that. And then she said, she asked me how I, how, that they had had somebody come recently who was Irish and they hadn't known how to spell the name. And they, so she spelt out phonetically the name Aoife. And I told her what the correct spelling of it was, absolutely staring at her by then. And so I had, she took out this notebook and bit by bit, their story emerged that they had got married late in life. They lived in some rural town somewhere in England that whose name I just couldn't, I forgot as soon as I heard it. It was unfamiliar to me. They each had a house, so they lived in one house for a while, and then they decided that they were going to have a big adventure, that they were going to sell both their properties and they were going to go to London. And as the man said, you know, the bright lights, see the shows, something new, something different. So they had bought this apartment in Primrose Hill with their combined houses in the rural town in England. And then they realised that they didn't know anybody. They knew nobody in London and they had no facility to make any friends. They didn't even know their neighbours. And then, as the woman said, we discovered loot.
It was, that's why.
It was free to advertise and they had far too much furniture because they'd had two houses. So what they did was they listed something for sale every couple of weeks, offering free delivery, gave their phone number and waited for the phone to ring. So I realised that this was their social life, and this is how they met people. This is why they were amazing, asking me so many questions. And in the notebook that this woman took out, she had the names of everybody who had come, what they had bought, where they lived in London, what they did for a living. And as she was speaking, she was incanting the previous objects in the room, which were no longer there. Like, this woman bought this china cabinet and Suzanne from Balham bought the towel rail in the bathroom and she was a social worker. And the whole place was this sort of architecture of loss, but also gain, I suppose, because they did meet people in this way. And, you know, at the time I thought it was incredibly sad and very an account of an incredibly loneliness in a big city. But now I kind of think, well, they were adapting as best they could to a situation that they found themselves in, and they seem to be kind of cheery about it. But I've never forgotten their story.
Brenda, delighted to hear Rosita. I've been drawn to Elsewhere ever since I avidly read the Reader's Digest World Atlas in the 50s as a youngster. I travel by train a lot in the 20s. Does Rosita like train travel? It's so relaxing.
I love trains.
Yeah, me too. Yes. And I want to talk about Bali because that's the last chapter in the book. And I know you've went to the Antarctica, Pakistan, lots of really fascinating places. But your last chapter is an incredibly moving chapter because it's not, it, the book is not such, so much about travel, it's about what's going on in your life and how travel, I suppose, can heal it a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about Bali and why you went there in the first place?
So usually there was never, I never needed a reason to go travelling other than my curiosity, and I just love to be elsewhere. But back in 2015, so the last chapter is set over 6 months between the end of 2015 and the beginning of 2016. And I went to my employers at the Irish Times and arrange some unpaid leave. And it was a real, for me, it was a real personal necessity to go away at that time, because I had been trying to be a parent for about 10 years. And I had I had been engaged in intercountry adoption, which hadn't happened for me, and I had aged out. And so my
God, that's horrible, aged out.
Well, that's what they, that's what that, that's what the phrase, the terminology is. It's so anyway, I knew that I needed to put some kind of geographical and I suppose psychic space between what I had hoped my life would be, which was one of being a parent, and one which I now knew it wasn't going to be, which was not going to be a parent. And I just needed to go away for a while and just be elsewhere, which is where I most love to be. And so I went off for 6 months, and I had no real plan on that trip, other than there were friends along the way that I wanted to go and visit, which I never usually did. I just went to one kind of area of a continent and would explore that. But I was in lots of different places on that trip. And I arrived in Bali on New Year's Day on 2016 and went to Ubud thinking I might stay 3 days. And I ended up spending 6 weeks there and had an amazing time and incredible experiences. And I definitely was able to move on and, you know, mend and become really happy and excited about life again and accept the things that had happened to me. And it was, yeah, a really, really special time.
Well, Rosita Boland's book, Elsewhere, One Woman, One Rucksack, One Lifetime of Travel, is a beautiful read, really well worth it. And I want to thank you for coming into studio, for sharing all that with us. There is lots more in the book. We did not touch on many of the continents that you visited, and I'd love to hear about them again. But it's all in the book, Elsewhere. Thank you so much for talking to us. We'll have more music from Alton just after the break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And we have Alton in studio again. Woohoo! And you're saying, will you ever hurry up? We've to hit the road to Drogheda. What are you up to tonight, Mairead?
Well, we're playing two things. We're doing the Fla Live, and that's at 8:30. And then we run up to the Barbican Centre and we play a full gig there. And then next week, of course, we're doing Ballykeith. And then we're playing a few other gigs in Ireland.
Will
as well.
I tell you what? Because I have them
I
written here. And why not? You're at the Phil Murphy. You're at the Phil Murphy Trad Weekend on September the 1st.
That's right.
Donegal Connect, September 29th. Roscommon Arts Centre, October 19th.
Thank you.
Am I now your best friend forever?
You are our best friend. Would you organise us, please?
Okay. Listen, we have Mark Kelly on guitar, Martin Tourish on piano, accordion, Karen Curran on bouzouki, and Mairead, of course, on vocals and fiddle. What are you going to sing for us? Give us a second song.
We're going to play a few Donegal reels, and you can dance away now.
I will. I'll put my hornpipes
Paddy's
on.
Paddy's trip to Scotland. Yoo-hoo! One, Yoo-hoo. Two.
Go for it. lads, I'm wrecked. I've just done the whole Siege of Venice to that. That's fantastic. Oh, wow, well done. That is Alton. And they're going to make their way straight now to the FLA. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
appreciate
having us,
that.
Brenda,
and you can catch them again in Ballykeith Abbey Theatre, Kilnamana, County Kilkenny, Saturday next, 24th of August.
Yeah.
What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Safe travels. Anish Thoshian and the Brief Skelton and Nota, Leclerna of Flaherty. And Pádraig, I have to wish you the best of luck on Sunday. You've got the big job.
Thank you very much. Yeah, big responsibility to carry, but sure, we'll have a bit of crack with it anyway.
You're on main commentary duty from Sunday Sport for the All-Ireland Hurling Final. What, is this your second one, Pádraig?
Third one, Brenda.
Third one, sorry. Yeah.
And I've John Milan with me, so I probably won't have to say too much.
No,
I think
you
John
won't.
John will carry it all.
All right, what a great team. Well, look, the very best of luck. Get the homework done.
Thanks, Brenda. I'll see you there.
All right. Pádraig Lodge, John Milan, RTE One, best of commentary on Sunday Sport this Sunday. Good luck to you, Pádraig Ormagod, Kieran O'Flaherty as well. And now I am joined in studio. What a day I'm having today. Garden designer Dermot Gavin is here to chat about the growing trend of owning houseplants. Sales of indoor shrubs and greenery have surged by 50%. In the last 3 years. Is that true, Dermot?
At least. It's extraordinary. And not only here or in Britain, all around the world. And generally it's young people who want to nurture something. Maybe they don't want to keep a cat or a dog or whatever. Maybe they're transient.
Or a baby.
Yes, exactly. Or they can't afford any of these things. They move from flat to flat.
Yeah.
But they do want to nurture something and they've decided on houseplants. As well as that, you get the interior designers, the fashion designers looking at the wonderful markings on these. A tropical look is definitely in, whether it's on your a dress you might wear, a shirt, your carpet or your curtains or whatever. So all of that has combined. You're looking at me very cynically.
No, I'm not.
Yes,
I'm
you
actually,
are.
I'm actually looking at you going, you look very well.
Oh, thank you.
Before we get into houseplants, how are you keeping yourself? How's your summer going for you?
It's good. Not long back from we had too long of a holiday in Italy.
What do you mean too long?
Oh God, I like working. I like planting. I like growing. I like drawing. So we were 2.5 weeks. Mind you, we travelled through Italy. So we had a few days in Rome, which I'd never been to. Amazing.
Yeah.
Naples. Have you been to Naples?
I have been to Naples. It's crazy, isn't it? The way they
crazy.
Drive. Yeah, amazing.
But extraordinary. I drove through Italy, so that was fun. Can you imagine around around? And then Puglia, which is the big place at the moment, the heel of Italy. We stayed in a town called Ostini, which was a town created by the Greeks a couple of thousand years ago, up on top of a hill. Extraordinary. Really beautiful. But I'm glad to be back.
You're glad to be back among your plants.
That's it.
Did the kids drive you a bit mad by the end of it? Was that it? Or can we say that?
No. We just had one, but we were with friends of ours. So there were three kids all in all, but they're of an age where it's makeup.
Makeup. Yeah, they have to look a certain way. It takes ages for them to get out at night.
So my wife was brought our little one, well, not so little anymore, into some cathedral in Rome. And my wife is nearly moved to tears by this sculpture, and the veil on the sculpture may be by Leonardo or something, sculpted from stone, and it's so beautiful, almost porous, you can see through it. And my little one seemingly is standing up against a pillar, snapchatting her friend, "Can you believe my mother has been staring at a piece of stone for 10 minutes.
And there you go, all that money you put into them.
So what was it, Kevin and Perry or something like that. Anyway, it was fun. We enjoyed it.
And in terms of work, you love working and you love planting.
Yes.
Have we anything super big coming up that you can tell me about?
Some very interesting stuff.
Yeah,
but I can't tell you about it.
But I've heard something.
What have you heard?
I can't tell you, because I'm not going to say it if you're not going to say it. I'll tell you if you tell me.
I mightn't be allowed to say it, so I don't know.
All right, well, look, we'll move on to the plans when I get back. It is soon.
It's soon, yeah, but then, yeah.
And it's with somebody else.
It's with I think they call it Double Trouble.
Double Trouble.
There's our hint.
And it'll be on the telly.
And it might be on the telly.
That's all I'm saying. Okay, we've given enough before I actually get in trouble. Listen, it looks like a jungle in here. What have you brought in?
So we have this shop in the city centre called Outer Spaces. It's a Dunstores shop. And I went in to raid it there. And I didn't know the girl behind the counter. And she must have thought, who is this guy pulling up in his Jeep? and robbing all our display. I've brought a jungle. I've brought
it's
things
amazing.
Like the umbrella plant.
These are all house plants.
These are all house plants. Plants that, mind you, all houseplants, virtually all houseplants, love to be outside during the summer. So until about mid-September, we can put them out. And you know this tropical rain we're getting at the moment? Mm. You get this these downpours and then this humidity, this heat.
I mean, we're that's roasting in here.
And
yeah.
Yeah, they all absolutely love that.
It.
So I tend to keep my houseplants outside for the summer. But these are all easy to grow houseplants. For instance, we have the Sansevierias there. That one known as the mother-in-law's tongue, leathery foliage,
that's
leathery
a big
leaves,
plant
really
now.
Big,
You'd really,
really
need a lot of
sharp.
Space. And why is it the mother-in-law's tongue?
Well, look at it. It's a stereotype.
You're in trouble with your daughter now, the mother-in-law.
I'm always in trouble.
Yeah.
We've other things like the urn plant. Look at that one. Would be
wow.
That'd be from a jungle.
Can you describe that? Because I don't know my plants
so
enough
it's a,
to try
it's a
and
hanging
describe
plant
the picture.
And it's called the pitcher plant. It's a hanging plant, big strap-like leaves. And at the end
wow.
of the leaves, you have these pitchers. And these pitchers fill up with liquid and they drown little insects. In that liquid, and that's where the plant
the
gets
nourishment.
Some of its exactly.
It's,
yeah.
Okay, I can describe. So you've got your plant, your yeah. hanging plant with the long green foliage,
yeah,
and it looks like little elf's shoes,
yes,
hanging out.
I suppose it does.
10 of them.
A plant like
yeah.
this will really encourage children to get, because there is something kind of gothic and scary about it, because it does drown insects, it does
yeah.
dismember them, and it does use their bodies, as you say, for nutrients. Easy plant to look after if you give it plenty of light. And it likes to be soaked in water.
Love it.
So if you give it plenty of light, if you soak it, unlike most plants, which like to dry out maybe between soakings.
Sorry, I know what it's like. It's like a chime.
Yes, is it?
It is a bit like a chime.
Like a
wind chime?
Chime. It's like a wind chime, yeah.
Yeah.
I hate wind chimes in
yeah.
gardens.
Do you?
I hate them.
Why?
It's
lovely and magical, the nice little...
No,
sound.
If I
had Alton here, they'd play the sound effect for
I'd
you.
Have Fontaines DC blaring in the garden. I love that, but not our belly
oh,
or
Dermot,
something like that.
Lots of questions here. I'm going to go
before we
come
to questions,
yeah.
have a look at that.
That's
do you know
fair.
That? Have you seen that before?
No,
a plant
what is
like
it?
That. Well, you describe it. I suppose it looks like the top of a pineapple.
Yeah, very small pineapple.
Miniature top of it. There's one that's slightly bigger.
Okay.
It's an air plant, and that survives on humidity. So
wow.
it doesn't need any soil, and actually you can kind of hot glue them onto pieces of coral or wood and hang them up in your house. So it takes all its nutrients from the air. It prefers humidity. We mightn't get as much humidity as they would get in places
I
like
love that.
Maybe Singapore. But you dunk that every few days in a bucket of water, and that will grow very, very happily.
I love that.
So
we'll
all
have to
the
put
nutrients
some pictures
and,
of these, and we'll put them up.
The big thing about houseplants is Instagram. Everybody, the amount of accounts, there's a
give me
Monstera. This is Monstera. So that's a Swiss cheese plant. And there's a thing called Monstera Monday on Instagram.
Okay.
And hundreds of thousands of people upload pictures of that leaf. You see with the big chunk taken out of the leaf. The
yeah, why is the chunk? Is that
just
an
the way
insect?
It grows
yeah,
in
yeah.
the jungle. If you want to see a massive one of these, go to the greenhouse in the Botanic Gardens, and there's a huge one that crawls.
Isn't that
up
a lovely plant?
And look at the roots, the aerial
yeah.
roots that come from it. If anybody wants to, I'll put these up on. I put a little video of the shop up just before I came in,
mm-hmm.
but on
can you
Dermot
reach
Gavin
some
account.
Of them here?
Yeah, yeah. There's a bromeliad. Look at that.
Oh, that is so pretty.
Isn't it? And the
no,
colour
like
that's in the centre of that.
The kitchen.
Yeah. And kitchen it would absolutely love because it likes a steamy place. Is your kitchen steamy?
Always.
Always.
Maybe I'll put it in the bedroom.
Well, generally bathrooms are kitchen. It's a jungle plant. It's an epiphyte. So normally
how
that
much
would grow.
Care?
A little bit of care because it collects water in the centre of the urn. So as it rains, water collects there. You don't want to leave, so you put water there. If you're watering houseplants, try and use rainwater. Much better for it. It hasn't been treated with anything.
Okay.
And put water right down the very centre of the plant, but don't let it go stagnant, so change it every kind of 2 weeks. Very easy plant to grow, and in the wild, that would grow with its roots latching latching on to trees halfway up a palm tree in a jungle.
We have to put these on Instagram because they are beautiful. I love this little one here.
Oh, that's the fern, maidenhair fern. Absolutely beautiful. And again, perfect for a moist environment. It probably doesn't have any scent, and a lot of houseplants are just grown for their foliage. But that's really lovely. You know, there are people who grow some of these plants outside in garden. Look, I've put a cactus beside you.
Yeah.
There's an amazing guy called Jimmy Blake. Have you heard of him?
No.
He has a garden called Huntingbrook in Blessington, County Wicklow, just up the road. You have heard. Mm. And his sister June has another remarkable garden. So on that stretch, on the way up to Rusborough, where the RHSI have their gardens, go and visit Jimmy's garden and June's garden, because they have Jimmy has cacti growing out among his ornamental bananas in the middle, in a valley in Wicklow. It's quite extraordinary, and that comes down to our temperate climate. So we can grow plants that have originated from all around across the globe. Of course, Jimmy's going to take them in for winter into his conservatory orangery type place to protect them. But we have brilliant gardens. There's another, the umbrella plant, and this is a variegated umbrella plant. That's very architectural, very easy to look after. I grow varieties of Chef Lyra out that are hardy in my garden in Kilmechanic in County Wicklow.
Okay, couple of questions here, Dermot, because obviously you're on lots of questions. I'm going away on holidays for a week and a half. I'm worried all my plants will die. Any advice?
Maybe put them outside. Maybe see if you get somebody to water them. Or what I often advise people to do is get a bucket of water or a bath of water, get a towel, cut the towel into strips and lead the towel from the bat, from the bucket, to the compost, and it acts as a kind of capillary mat, a wick in a way, and it keeps the compost moist.
Okay, ask Dermot, what plants suit a sunny apartment?
A sunny apartment, that one that loves plenty of light, something like this, the pitcher plant is going to be perfect. It needs loads and loads of light. Generally, house plants will not like direct sunlight. The cacti and succulents will absolutely adore it. So think desert conditions, really hot during the day. Don't mind if it goes a little bit cold at night. They'd be very happy in a sunny... I'm thinking it's direct sunlight, the person is talking about.
Please recommend a nice cactus that doesn't look too ugly. I think this cactus you've brought in is quite pretty.
I'll put that one up on Instagram.
What's it called again?
We just have them listed as...
It's cacti,
in the Euphorbia family. It's a cacti. For a tenner, at dinosaur, it's not bad, is it?
No, it's not bad. Okay, and it doesn't look ugly. I'm looking at it, it doesn't.
No, it's very pretty.
What plants work well in bathrooms?
In bathrooms, any of the ones, so we're back to this maidenhair fern, any of the ones that like same, orchids. You know the orchids you buy in shopping centres and whatever, all of those will do well in the steamy situation of a bathroom where there's a shower. But you need good ventilation in any of those to keep it healthy for the plant and for you.
How long will many of these plants live?
They should live forever. There's the mother-in-law's tongue. Now, we've two varieties of that. One is just straight up. It's almost like a pencil and just straight up with a small... So they're almost impossible to kill. So they'll go on and on and on forever.
I hope I'm not reading this incorrectly. Why is my buttocks plant? No.
You're reading it incorrectly.
Bux toss. I'm actually only messing.
Buxes.
Buxes plant, change colour. I have two. One is dark green and the other one's got a very light green colour.
If it's Buxes, Buxes translates is the Latin for boxwood. And box is been attacked by a number of different things and really badly attacked by caterpillars or blight. If it's gone dramatically, if it's changed dramatically, if it's been stripped of leaves, you might have lost it. Throughout the world, it's been attacked. We are getting... When I was in Puglia, olive trees in that part of Italy were being decimated. So if it's climate change or whatever, there's lots of stuff happening that we wouldn't be thrilled about. So... there's probably nothing you can do. If it's just a light green, maybe give it some feed. But you might be looking at having to replace it with something like Ilex crenata, which is a Buxus-like plant that's often been used for topiary now.
Okay, what Instagram account is the pictures of the plants going up on, Brenda?
Dermot Gavin. I think it's just Dermot Gavin. And I put a little video of the shop with the plant. And I'll take a photograph of all these sitting on your desk. And later on, I will give care instructions for each and every one.
Okay. Hi, Brenda. I'm really smiling here. My father had most of these plants 60 years ago when I was a child.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Living in Germany. Most people in Germany have them, says Andrea.
In Germany and some of the Scandinavian countries, they never went out of fashion. In Britain and Ireland, they certainly did. They were associated with your mom or your granny. The spider plant was the kind of iconic one, or the rubber plant that went straight up, or the yucca. But now they're back in. You know, absolutely everything goes round in a cycle.
And the passion for the love that you have for the outdoors and the garden, it's still there.
Do you know,
even bigger after spending 2.5 weeks with your family.
If you live in this country and we can grow, you know, the soil always wants to produce something. Turn over the soil in this country, seeds will grow. You can do it without thinking. We're getting more and more into natural gardening, not using any artificial feeds, any things that kill anything. And I think that is the way we should go. Let our gardens be a bit more untidy and enjoy it. And if we do that, the amount of wildlife will attract. Birds, bees, butterflies, you name it. Gardens will be teeming.
How are the royal family?
I haven't seen any of them for
really?
A little while. No.
Okay.
I get a Christmas card from one of them every year, but he doesn't realise I don't do anything for him anymore.
Who's that?
Charles and Camilla, without fail. Because I'm officially an ambassador for one of his trusts or something like that. But in about 3 or 4 years, they haven't asked me to do anything. He was over in Wicklow. He was down with Seamus O'Brien in Kilmacurra, which is the Wicklow offshoot of the National Botanic Gardens. And Charles had a brilliant, he loves his plants, and he had a brilliant time with Seamus, and Seamus is sending him over various choice bits and pieces to Highgrove over the next few weeks.
Okay, very interesting. And when will your programme be on the television, this new programme that we're not allowed to mention?
I don't know. And it's, well, it's a one-off, it's actually, it's not a one-off, so. It's fun.
All right. Well, before both of us get in trouble, I can't thank you enough. And we'll share those pictures on the Radio 1 Instagram account as well. Dermot Gavin, have a great weekend.
And same to you, Brenda.
We'll take a break. Great to see you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And it's Brenda Dunne here. We have a bit of a busy studio because Dermot is going around taking pictures of the plants for Instagram. And I'm now being joined by Chef Gary O'Hanlon. He's here to talk about his new gig as a chef in a chateau in France, no less. Before I even say hello, two of the weakest areas of my life are plants and cooking. So I actually think if I could merge the two of you into one, I'd have the perfect husband and I could call it Dermot O'Hanlon. What do you think?
I started off as a chef before.
I can't hear you.
I started off as a chef. I started work as a commis chef when I left school. Yeah, in a restaurant in Temple Bar. God, so 1982.
And then you saw Saints.
I loved every moment.
Can we
it's
hear
a hard life.
It's
long hours.
Yeah, it can be, yeah, but sure, it's no more than this gig here. I'd love to have greener fingers as well. I mean, we grew up on farms and tipping away, and everybody in Ireland at some point or other as a kid, like, would have grown something, you know. But I have a lovely big garden. I'm ashamed to say I don't have any plants in it yet. It's just all grass, but the grass is starting to annoy me. So I've been on with Dermot a few times on TV and now here in radio, and I'm going, like, I really should listen better, you know.
Well, no, the big thing is to let your grass grow and let the dandelions of the daisy grow, because if you don't, if you cut your grass, the grass flowers aren't flowering. You don't allow them to. The lawnmower comes in. It's no good for the environment.
Yeah.
So let it grow. That's your excuse.
Well, there you go. I hope my wife is listening, because she's my head mither. Even when I'm in Lurie in the Loire Valley, she's like, when's the grass getting cut?
I feel sorry for your wife. You've upped and left. But not left.
No.
And you're working in a chateau in France.
Yeah,
do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, Chateau de Coudreau. Yeah, it's in Lurie in France. Yeah. So look, Anthony, he's a good buddy of mine. He I want to work with him in the Galway Bay back in the day. So he just had a wee bit of an SOS. Asked me to come out and did I know somebody actually that could come and help them out for a few weeks. back a month or more ago, and I was like going, actually, I was planning on taking the summer off, and I was just doing a few bits here and there in London with the BBC and whatnot, and then I says, do you know what, Anthony's a good old buddy. I says, look, I'll go for it myself, and the second I saw Chateau de Coudreau, I fell in love with it.
I've looked at pictures online, stunning.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Yeah, and like the director of hospitality, Ian Hassett, a guy I know really well. He's a big caliber coming from Ashford Castle and Carton House and the K Club, and then Niall Carroll as well, the general manager, is from the K Club as well back in the day in the Heritage. So it's a wee bit of Ireland in Loire Valley in France, and just I was only there a few days. And they just says, look, you know, what are the chances of you maybe staying on? And look, I says, I need to talk to the boss, you know. But look, I'm coming and going a good bit. And the way the business works, like, it has been used as a home, and it's going to be used as a, like, we're going to turn it into commercial property now. So between Niall and Anna and myself, I think over the next couple of years, that's the aim now, is to make a business out of it, you know.
So if you train as a chef, and I think, Dermot, you trained as a chef, you said it there. Is it French cuisine you train mainly in, first of all? And what is the appeal of it? Like, are you over there to cook French food?
No.
What's going on?
I think I'm just there. It's like anything. My time in Boston or back in Ireland or now in France, you're just anywhere to cook really good food, you know. But I suppose just by default, anyone that's ever gone to college as a chef here in Ireland or even the UK or America, any of the colleges like that, Escoffier, the classically trained chefs, anyone that's gone through the college route are all trained the French way. So I suppose being in France is actually really easy, you know what I mean? Because a lot of your techniques, and then the other side of it is there's a bit of an arrogance there with French, and they're supposed, you know, the founders of food and whatever. But I think Ireland and Irish restaurants and even the UK, London, the States beyond, like, they've all surpassed France. Like, I've yet to eat in a restaurant in France that is memorable. And, I mean, they're all quite good. The techniques are all there. But they haven't pushed on. Like, I think you'll often read about it that there's almost an arrogance there in the sense that the traditional ways. And I think in any walk of life, if you're not adapting or moving with the times, you become really, really stagnant. Whereas in Ireland here, we've taken those classical, you know, techniques and cooking techniques. And yes, they're all French, maybe by name or by standard, but we've put our own stamp on them. And then we have the beauty of the Irish ingredient and the Irish produce and whatnot. But everybody now is just getting better. I mean, I wish some of the younger chefs would slow down because it's exhausting trying to keep on top. And I think, like, my 10 years in Viewmount House, like, I remember maybe a few years ago having a bit of a mental block on menus, and I opened up like menus from 2008 and 9 and 2010, and I was like going, oh my goodness, like, and just, did I really put that on a menu? And it wouldn't have been good enough nearly for a lunch menu in 2014 or 2015 and so on. But at the time, it was still ahead of its time, you know what I mean? And I was like going, all right, well, no, like, you've always been known as being pretty okay. But that, what it did to me then is I took a really good look at it, and I had pages and pages and pages of menus on that database in Viewmount. And I was like going, Jesus, like, food, like, there's 10 years in a nutshell there. And I was like going, just the techniques, the standard that everybody had to come to in the kitchen, the other machines that you had to buy. I was blessed that I had owners that kept reinvesting in the kitchen anytime I needed something to do something else. They always said yes. But then we got results at the other side of it. So in Ireland, we've become really, really innovative. But the one thing I'd say, I mean, I love France, I love the French people, but that part of it is definitely now being surpassed by the rest of the world.
It's interesting, and we're coming towards the end of the show, so I'll get to it quickly. You both live in Ireland, you're based in Ireland,
yeah,
but you're now doing a lot of your work in, I suppose, different parts of the world, really. How do you find that? Just as kind of family men, is it difficult? Is it stressful? Or has the world changed so much that these things are now possible, Dermot?
It always sounds very glamorous, but when you're up at 4:30 in the morning out on a Ryanair somewhere to Sheffield, to Newcastle, to the south of France for a day or something like that, if you go to China, you have to be there 10 days to make it work well. I think as you get older, it gets tougher.
Gary, you getting older?
Definitely, yeah. Listen, once Nettie's happy at home, most of my life then is pretty much plain sailing, you know what I mean? But look, a lot of people would look at your life and see you here, see you there. Look, whenever I go to France, you know, you could get up and you go, and it's not to sound like a hero, but I can tell you now, I'm in the kitchen at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. You could be finished 10, 11, 12, 1 a.m. I love every second of it when I'm there. The one thing about being there, though, as well, that I have found, and Nettie's the same, she says she can hear the happiness in my voice, you know, like, so I'm back to the Viewmount days where I probably, there was a couple of years there where I'm not going to say I lost the love of food, but it grinds you down, you know. But I was only in France a day or two, and she says, Jesus, like, you've lit up completely. So look, hard work is grand, but it's not as glamorous as
it seems. Would you recommend your chosen careers for people, like, because it is hard work? So say your nearest and dearest, your kiddies said, I want to do what you do, Daddy.
In an instant for me. In an instant. Yeah, the satisfaction of it is just extraordinary. And also, I'd say the same for you, the grounding. If you're dealing with stuff that comes from the soil, you'd learn a lot about life.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'd be nervous if Cora or wee Ollie, like Cora's nearly 6 and Ollie's nearly 3, if they said they were going to become chefs. But at the same time, I would expect them to, if they were going to do it, that they'd be doing it to the best of their abilities. And I think, like, if you're grinding every day and you're doing things proper, you will get pretty close to the top of the food chain. You should anyway, you know, if you're going to graft. It's not easy, but sure. Look, I've been around TV and radio world, and I see camera crews and producers and all sorts. I mean, there's a lot of tough careers out there. So, yeah, it's
you're
not
telling
the worst.
Me. Anyway, it's great to chat the two of you. I've discovered a new man, Dermot O'Hanlon. A mix of the two of you. Guys, have a great weekend. All those will be up on Instagram. Good luck in France, Gary.
Thank you.
The very best of luck with your travels. That's it for me for the week. Ray will be back on Monday. A massive thanks to a great team here I've worked with all week. We've had great fun. Enjoy the weekend wherever you are. I'll be back with Damien Lawler, Marty Morrissey and myself live after the All-Ireland final from the Crow Park Hotel with all the ups and downs of the game. Do join us, RTÉ Radio 1, 6 o'clock. But right now, with all the latest news, it's Mary Wilson and Drive Time.